Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Influence with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Markets in Asia tumbled again as Wall Street saw another plunge overnight on virus fears. Asian stocks fell in early trading as Wall Street saw another rout overnight. Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 1.07% in early trade after dropping more than 3% yesterday. South Korea's KOSPI tumbled 1.79%. The KOSDAQ dropped 1.62%. With no peak in outbreak cases in sight, markets and governments are struggling to contain the spread, not just of the virus, but of panic, fear, outrage, and fake news. Good communication is essential in quelling fears. What can we learn about risk communication when we know that containing an outbreak is so much more than a public health challenge? It's also a battle for hearts and minds and a psychological challenge. Communication is key in that whole matrix. So what has COVID-19 taught us about risk communication so far that perhaps businesses can tap on? Dr. Christopher Cummings is founding director at Decision Analytica and a senior research fellow at North Carolina State University. His work focuses on advancing public engagement with science, developing risk communication theory, and improving public health decision making. Dr. Cummings, welcome to Influence. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm actually a bit of a familiar face there because up until December of this last year, I was working at the Wee Kim Wee School of Communication and Information at Nanyang Technological University. So it's nice to be back on the airwaves in Singapore.
Terrific. And I'm sure many of your students are listening in as well. Dr. Cummings, I wonder if we could start with your assessment of where we are right now in terms of risk communication. How well have we done so far? What are the key lessons that COVID-19 has taught us so far?
You know, this has been a very interesting case from a scholastic perspective on risk communication, because it's one that demonstrates that it's a really difficult battle to communicate about risks effectively. Mm-hmm. On one hand, we have very good proactive engagement by governments and institutions in Singapore who have done a very good job to try and be as prepared as possible and try and prepare the population as much as possible for outbreaks. But we do see that kind of formal level of communication has actually prompted some panic in response. And so for me as a risk communicator, it's important for us to note and remember that oftentimes when we base our decisions about risk, it doesn't necessarily come from a rational place, but more of an emotional place.
Absolutely.
You mentioned fear, panic, and outrage. And so what we need to be able to do better from a business standpoint, from a governance standpoint, is be able to anticipate that when we say there's a threat, we need to anticipate that people may not be basing their reactions out of anywhere but an emotional place on how they're planning on responding.
So companies and countries are realizing the importance of general strategies for risk communication. I wonder, could traditional forms of communication inadvertently trigger unhelpful perception of risks?
Absolutely. Walking this tightrope of risk communication is very difficult. On one hand, we have to oftentimes try and scare the public, in a sense, to try and get them involved to understand that there's a real risk that could be severe and could likely happen to them. And then on the other hand, we have to lean back on the other side of the tightrope and try and calm the public back down again so that way we reach some happy equilibrium. And that's very difficult to do. And so we saw, you know, with the change of the DRSCON to Orange recently, that we were trying to get the public involved, saying, hey, this could be very serious. We need to be prepared. And unfortunately, that can sometimes push too far, where people actually respond in a way where we actually saw things like the panic buying and some of these things that can be very burdening on businesses that aren't prepared as well.
Indeed. So how exactly, what are some key takeaways you think you can share with our audience in terms of walking that tightrope between managing public perception, you know, managing the outrage, and yet providing the transparency that's so key and so important, providing the information that's important for public safety?
Yes. What we need to do is to not just say to members of the public, hey, there's something bad out there, but we need to give them the feasible action steps that make sense for our entire population to be able to act in a way that's going to be responsible and going to hopefully benefit public health for everybody. And so with that, when we do something like formally raise an alert level, we need to couple that with formal action plans. Here are the exact steps that people can take so that way they can do what should be done in order to mitigate this risk. So what we see now is a very good opportunity for Singaporean families and others to look at this situation and come up with a good action plan. What is it that you need to have in an emergency preparation kit that you have stashed away in your home? That would then alleviate some of the fears that we saw and the runs that we've seen where people are out trying to hoard in mass hand sanitizer, tissue paper, masks, and the like. And so if we can do a better job to communicate about what should be the appropriate steps and give people kind of that recipe to follow, we're likely to see a better response that's going to be less fueled by panic and fear.
Yeah, so it's about concrete action plans that allow people to feel a sense of control in a time where it seems like there's an existential crisis. Is that it?
Absolutely. With issues like this, we see cases where the threat seems new, it seems novel, it seems potentially exotic, foreign, and all of these things kind of drive that engine of outrage. They cause us to feel the risk more than to think through the risk. And so that's where suddenly we see people who see their neighbors coming home with, you know, large shopping bags and carts filled with things, and they go, oh gosh, this must be very serious. I've got to panic and do the same.
And then they realize they don't have a bunker big enough to hoard.
Correct. All these things. You know, there's not a giant bunker that we can all hide out in. And truthfully, with Singapore being so population dense, it's very easy for us to see our neighbors and how they act. And so if some of our neighbors are panicking, that's going to spread almost like a virus can spread. That panic and fear will go person to person. And so we see this kind of cascade effect, this kind of social norming effect, where suddenly we see this panic en masse. Well, we probably wouldn't see that if Singapore were more spread out or less dense.
Great point. What can businesses keep in mind when communicating with staff? I have some people, you know, chatting with me saying that they feel like they're spoken to sometimes as digits and that their welfare is not top priority and it's business continuity that is the priority of corporations. I wonder if you have some tips for businesses on communicating effectively with staff during this time, even as we anticipate moving perhaps to a different level from orange.
Sure. If things stay where they are or escalate, businesses need to be prepared to, number one, take care of their employees so that way they can keep things running. If you anticipate that you will need certain key employees in office or on the factory lines, you need to make contingency plans to have available replacement hours so that way the business can keep running well while you take good care of your employees. This is a strange virus. The latest reports note that it can live on surfaces for up to 9 days. So we need to make sure that businesses, especially where you have lots of heavy traffic, people coming in and out, do up their game on their own sanitation level as well to help make sure that they don't become a vector for spreading the disease. And then businesses really need to consider what the ethical standard is for their practice and how they concern themselves with just general human welfare. If they promote a good job that they are doing, a good ethical stand against COVID-19, they're going to see that return with their own reputation. And so here's a chance and an opportunity for businesses to leverage this as a way to really demonstrate value to the public beyond just the product or service that they might be providing.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Christopher Cummings. He directs Decision Analytica, a risk consultancy firm. He also serves as Senior Research Fellow at North Carolina State University. And he formerly served as Assistant Professor of Strategic Communication at Nanyang Technological University right here in Singapore.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.